We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is Mike Gorman, and you're listening to Green with Envy with Will, Adam, and Greg.
All right, everybody. Not what we wanted, not what we expected heading into this Thursday live stream. Celtics Heat tied 1-1, heading to Miami after a Heat victory in the TD Garden. Does this sound a little familiar? Maybe a little too familiar. We're going to dig into that, see if we can figure out what happened, where we go from here. This is Green with Envy. You guys know the deal. Let's lock in. What up? Welcome into another edition of Green with Envy. It is a Thursday live stream. This is your boy Will Weir checking in. How you doing? How you living? Joining me today to parse through everything that happened in game two of Celtics Heat and try to figure out where we go from here is my best friend, co-host, and the coach of our podcast, the one and only Greg Menakis. How you doing?
Doing okay. I was thinking, you know, yesterday, with all the discourse around the Miami Heat not having Jimmy Butler, how in the past a Celtics team like this would have probably given up a game to the Miami Heat, and I was like, no, this team's different. Mm-hmm. We're past that. This is 2024. We're all grown up now.
We go 37-4 at home. We don't lose home games. This is a different team.
We learned our lesson from the past. And I think we were just talking too much shit about Caleb Martin.
I know, dude, believe me, that is the first thing I thought of. So last night I wasn't able to watch neither of us where Greg and I had our own men's league games. We were kind of watching the game on the bench a little bit and then caught the fourth quarter live, had to rewatch the game this morning, mixed in with some clips. And so the first thing I thought of was, this might be my fault. We went in on Caleb Martin sucks. What was that last year? And of course, Caleb Martin comes back to kind of bite us in the ass with his 3-point
man possessed, dude. And I think the worst thing about watching Caleb Martin, like he's definitely got a nice game. I remember watching him at Nevada, mm-hmm. thinking he had like an NBA ready game. It's just like his shot is so broken looking. So when you have someone who's nailing 3-pointers where there's no arc on it, it's not the way that you would normally teach it. Kind of like how Halliburton shoots. I'm not saying like he shoots like Halliburton, but the same way as when you watch it, you're like, there's no way that's supposed to go in.
You get more frustrated, right? Because when a guy like, you know, Klay Thompson or Peyton Pritchard has pretty good form, like you know what I mean? Like when you see that, you're like, okay, like that kind of makes sense. Like that guy's shooting the way, I don't know what the equivalent for basketball be, but you remember those Tom Emanski like baseball videos where it's like all the training tapes. Well,
the JJ Redick video that he released before he entered the NBA. Remember that? It was like right out of Duke. He released like the greatest shooter ever. Teaches you how to shoot. It's like very much like the Tom
Hanks. Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying. Like stuff like that. Like that makes sense. You're like, okay, I get it. Like your elbows tuck, you got the follow through, you know, your shoulders are square. It's like all the stuff that you would hear as a kid as you're going through, you know, 5, 6, 7-year-old drills. Someone's learning the game. It's when you see the guy that does it like Sean Marion. Bryant, or does it like Tyrese Halliburton, or does it like Caleb Martin, where there's this added level of frustration, like, no, this is the right call. We should let that guy shoot, right? I mean, that's what you would do in a pickup game, right? If you, yeah, if you saw somebody shoot the first time.
The moment he shot, I'd be like, oh, he ain't a shooter. Let him shoot.
Exactly. Exactly. And you see him make one, you go, let him take it again. Right. And then we just did that six times and he made five. So it didn't exactly work out. But, you know, with a little bit of time for this to sit, because last night, you know, it got a little chaotic on the timeline. Let's be real. It was a little bit of stress management. I did see some rational thoughts creep in, and I'd like to think that we fall in that camp. But there's no doubt that there's a frustration level to this game. And I think you kind of highlighted it a second ago. Right? Like, I'm not in panic mode by any means. I'm in frustration mode. That's totally where I think I've settled. And I think ultimately we're going to talk about, does this mean anything going forward, like beyond even this series? Because I don't think this series is in any type of jeopardy. I'm not there by any means. It's more a, you know, it's a buildup of previous seasons where we've seen, and this is where I've been tentative all year about how great the Celtics have been at home. Because to me, it's always been, this has been one of the elements where it's like, cool, do it in the playoffs, because they've had good home records, not to the level that it was this year with 37-4, but they've been in the top five home teams in the NBA the 2 years prior to this. And we've seen six losses each of the past two seasons, now 13 losses and two plus playoff seasons at home, six of which are to Miami, which is, I still don't understand this deal with the devil that the Heat have, but that's for me where most of the frustration lies. In the overall outlook is just the inability to defend home court. We'll get into the specifics of what happened last night, but that for me is the biggest frustration leaving this. It's just continuing to falter on at home with these crowds that, listen, Donnie Wahlberg before the game was on, I caught a clip of him on the NBC Sports game. He was like, we got to be better than like game one. We were okay. We got to be better. Jalen last year called out the crowd a little bit. The crowd responded. Like, it's enough with the crowd. You guys just got to defend home court. You got to be better at home. This is on the players and the coaches. Like, this is not about the fans. You got to be better at home, plain and simple.
Yeah, and there is like a level of we've been here before. This, we're expected to win this series. I'm talking from the crowd perspective, where like, if Jimmy Butler's playing, maybe the crowd is a little bit more into it from the jump. But because Jimmy Butler's not playing, we're expected to win the series. It's not like Madison Square Garden where they're starved for playoff success and they're going up against Joel Embiid and they have a team that's going to play hard regardless. And they're just so excited to be there. Same thing with the Thunder crowd. When you see that team and they're the new team on the block and everyone's just like, yeah, we're fucking finally back, you know, with the Celtics, it's like, we need to get over the hump. So these the Celtics are in such a difficult place to be, because the only thing that's gonna, you know, say the season was a success is a championship. That's it. You know, like they can't lose a game. That's Jason
and, Tatum, and in the rounds leading up to it, it's domination, right? Especially when
dominate, like all these things that are just not really realistic, especially when you talk about a team like the Heat. I'm not excusing the Celtics for losing last night. I was pissed off that they lost the game last night. But the Heat last year, like, Jimmy Butler was good in the Eastern Conference Finals, but he wasn't like otherworldly Jimmy Butler. Caleb Martin was probably their best player in the series last year.
Dan said it last night. He should have been the Eastern Conference Finals MVP. It should have gone to Caleb Martin last year.
Absolutely. And Tyler Hero didn't play, you know, so they still have that offensive spark. So, like, there's a world in which this offensive unit actually, like, works a little bit better for the Heat than with, like, the Jimmy Butler-centric offense. They've got pieces like Jokic. Bam's playing out of his mind right now. He always does against the Celtics. So it's not like this team is missing Jimmy Butler, Tyler Hero, and another piece. You know what I mean? They're missing Jimmy Butler and Rozier, who wasn't even playing well for them, and it was a late, you know, midseason pickup. So it's not like they don't have talent. It's just they don't have Jimmy Butler right now, which, if the Celtics lost the series, sure, like, that's the worst thing in the world. Like, you can't lose to a Heat team without Jimmy Butler. But I was talking to my buddy who's a Sixers fan today, and he was like, how you doing, bro? And I was like, honestly, man, I'm kind of pissed off. And he's like, dude, you guys are fine. Like, from, he was like, from a Sixers, he's like, you guys are fine. Like, everyone's freaking out. I would love to be in the Celtics position. This is Sixers fan talking. And he's like, the Heat are good. Like, if there's going to be a team that will steal a game as an 8 seed, it's not like you guys are playing the fucking Charlotte Hornets. You're playing the Miami Heat with Spo, and like with all the playoff pedigree, they're probably going to win a game or two. Like, it's, you know, he was trying to like talk me down off the ledge because I was really going through it this morning. And after that conversation, I was like, okay, I feel a little bit better now.
Yeah, and there's certainly to this game, which we're going to get into the specifics here in just a minute, there's a little bit of the math is mathing, right? And that's one thing that I think you will hear a lot is that it's really hard to sweep a team in the NBA these days with the way that three-point variance can swing a game. And part of that is going to be related to what happened last night. But before we start getting into the specifics here, just if you're joining us here in the live stream, first of all, appreciate you guys for tuning in. If you have any questions, please drop them in the chat. We will make sure that we hit those along the way. I know we got one from our Discord channel that we're going to get into here as well. But Greg, I thought the best way that we could go about this here is let's just take it, because everyone, I think last night when it got a little chaotic on the timeline, it became this blame pie of, do we blame the offense? Do we blame the defense? Do we blame Mazzulla, who's kind of controlling all of it?
Blame ourselves?
Yeah. Right. Yeah, like it was scattershot everywhere. So let's just take this piece by piece. And while we do this, we can then start to look at what gets corrected or based on a lot of the comments last night, what do we not overreact to, you know, and we'll kind of figure out what that means for game three. So let's start on the offensive side of things. And I'm going to be real with you from my perspective. This is the bigger issue from last night, the offense over the defense. We'll get to the defense in a minute here, but at the end of the day, the Miami Heat scored 111 points. That's not that many points in a modern NBA basketball game, especially when you have one of the top offense of all time, basically, at least statistically speaking. And so, Greg, let me ask you, in the NBA this season, how many teams do you think averaged over 111 points this season?
More than half.
Yeah, it's 23 teams. So this is not like a crazy number. We'll get to the defense. Like, it's not that it's like I'm absolving them, but 111 points is not a crazy point total to get to. The Celtics scored 101 points. They only scored less than that amount 4 times this year. Not surprising. 4 of their losses all came from them not scoring above 101 points. So for the Celtics to barely scrape over the 100 point barrier, and they average 120 in the regular season, of course, playoffs, let's readjust, it's going to come down a little bit. Even still, they're far from what their average scoring total is, or what it would be expected to be. So I think for me, this is the area that I was not necessarily more concerned about, but I think if you look at this just from this particular game, that I look to where maybe things kind of went wrong. And Greg, I'll ask you, you know, from an offensive perspective, there's a few things that I thought stood out to me. You can pick one of these or you can take them in a different direction. We can either start with kind of hunting Tyler Hero and how that didn't work out. We could talk about some no-shows from KP. I thought Holiday, that's not a great mixtape in the first two games with Drew Holiday offensively. Peyton Pritchard, 0 shot attempts, too many ISOs. Is there a particular place that you think offensively we should start?
I think I want to kind of just go with kind of a bigger idea. So first quarter, I'm just looking at shot attempts here. First quarter, the Celtics shot 23 times in the first quarter. The second quarter, the Celtics shot 24 times. The third quarter, the Celtics shot 18 times. And in the fourth quarter, the Celtics shot 15 times. So 15 shot attempts in a quarter is not enough. They did get to the line 9 times in the fourth quarter, right? So you have to keep that into account. But 15 shot attempts in a quarter is not enough. They had 4 turnovers in the fourth quarter to Miami's 0. Miami had 0 shot attempts in that fourth quarter. Miami shot the ball, let's see, they were 21 times in the fourth quarter, 4 for 10 from 3, 4 for 4 from the line. They got 3 offensive rebounds to the Celtics, 1 offensive rebound. You know, so this the Heat just seemed like the team, the more polished team in the fourth quarter, especially where the Celtics, the 4 turnovers are completely inexcusable in the fourth quarter. You absolutely can't have that. And I felt like the turnovers throughout the game were an issue for me, where it seemed like there were a lot of lazy passes, home run plays, trying to like find KP in traffic when they didn't really need to. It felt like the Celtics were expecting to win, and they felt like they could just do whatever and whatever was going to work, and that's just not the case. To your point about the Hero hunting, you know, I thought the Celtics got a lot of good looks in the fourth quarter when I went back and just rewatched their shot attempts. It's just too slow, man. Like Scal on the broadcast was screaming. He was like pulling a Tommy. He was like, I don't understand why we're moving so slow. Like, why aren't we running the ball?
We're not moving at times. That's the other part. Just not moving. And like, here, let me play a clip for you. Yeah, this is from the third quarter. But this was an example of a play for me where I just don't know really what our intention was on this possession. And that's one of the things for me is just a lack of intention at times on some of these possessions. So here, let me play this.
He buries his fourth triple. Well, for 2 years, Boston's been content to let Caleb Martin shoot the ball, and he has hurt them many times, most notably in last year's Eastern Conference Finals.
Martin got a deflection here. Now it's five to shoot, and Brown, an air ball.
To me, just the amount or lack thereof amount of movement that the Miami Heat had to provide on that defensive series is something that I feel like it wasn't necessarily all in that same manner, but lack of movement, lack of cutting, just not the Celtic basketball that we know when it's at its peak, what it typically looks like.
Can you do me a favor? Play that one more time.
Yeah, gotcha.
He buries his fourth triple. Well, for 2 years, Boston's been content to let Caleb Martin shoot the ball, and he has hurt them many times, most notably in last year's Eastern Conference Finals.
Martin got a deflection here. Now it's five to shoot, and Brown, an air ball.
Gotcha, yeah. So lack of movement. Aside from that initial screen from KP, pick and roll, everybody stays in the exact same spot, right? Okay, I got you. I mean, with that possession, you know, Derek White brings the ball up. There's the opportunity for a little like pistol action or empty side pick and roll with him and JB on the left side of the court. They take away that initial pass to JB, and it felt like White froze. I don't know if they were supposed to be like a dribble handoff there, if the intention was always to swing the ball to Tatum for the pick and roll with Porzingis and then create off of that. But normally when you have that spacing, that initial spacing that you see, there's going to be some empty side action on the left side with Derek White dribbling for a dribble handoff with Jaylen, or maybe backing his guy down into that like short corner area where he could then go empty side pick and roll. So yeah, I mean that's a good example of the Celtics just kind of standing around and expecting Tatum to create an advantage. One thing that stood out to me on that possession though is Jovic. Jovic has actually been kind of impressive for me in his ability to kind of stay in front of the ball. So they're attacking Jovic. I think they were, as a team, like 0-for-5 or something, maybe like 0-for-8 shooting against Jovic in game one. I haven't looked at the matchup numbers on that yet, but he's actually been impressive. And when Tatum can't just blow by, right, then Caleb Martin is there to help out. That initial pass gets tipped. Tatum starts to panic a little bit. He does end up forcing the double team, swing the White, swing the Brown. So like that part, the end of it was okay with that extra pass, and then JB just airmailed it. But yeah, I feel you, man. There were a lot of times in that game last night where I was just wondering why the Celtics felt, especially down, the way they were down when you needed three-pointers to get back in the game, why they unless you're the Nuggets, consistently just decided to hero hunt, you know. And I think that's something in the film session that I'm sure they'll watch, and they'll talk about going away from their identity, because they didn't play to their identity in the second half of that game for sure.
Right. And with the hero hunting, so just some of the numbers, they were 7 of 23 when going directly at Tyler Hero on field goal attempts. For reference, they didn't no one else they shot against more than 11 times in that game. So 7 of 23 against Tyler Hero, specifically for Kristaps Porzingis. And this is where I want to go to next year, right? As 0-for-4 for Porzingis against Tyler Hero. Our guy Southsiders here in the chat, KP needs to have a better game and we're good. And I know we had a question from our Discord channel here. JT said, we need to be more creative in how we get KP the ball. What adjustments should we make for KP offensively? And just in case any of you are not aware of the comments that JT had, I got that pulled up here for us. So let's take a listen, Greg, and then I'd love for you to jump in here and see if you can either interpret what you think Jason means by being more creative, and then how the Celtics maybe can actually execute on that.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
With everyone fighting for attention, how can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy, with Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning marketplace platform has helped millions of small businesses stand out, stay top of mind, and see big results fast. It's okay if you don't know much about marketing. Constant Contact's writing assistant tools and automation features help you craft messaging and say the right things at the right time. I use this to help write and send my email newsletters, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
When you see like a defense that understands how to take away that thing that's kind of like a comfort zone for you guys, how do you want to respond to that?
Yeah, I think we got to be more creative. The playoffs are about making adjustments from game to game, and they did that. They're not just going to let us catch the ball. They're not just going to let us throw it to, KP easy. And, they're supposed to try to mess things up or make us think or make it a little bit tougher. And so it's our job to react in real time and, as well as make our adjustments going from game to game.
Yeah, specifically with KP, I think what they're referring to is the idea that they're just going to throw the ball to KP at the nail, and just let him go to work. But if you're especially going up against a set defense, even if KP has Tyler Hero in a mismatch, the way that the Heat play defense is they're going to pinch down. They're going to dig down and have active hands. And KP, he can really dominate from the nail, but there are times, and we were talking about this at the end of the season, his efficiency stats, in the post-up started to go down as teams started to be more physical with him and get up under his hips. So I think it's a lot to ask KP, even if he has a mismatch like Tyler Hero at the nail, to just deliver every single time. Like we were expecting, he had a bad game. He was 0-for-4 against Hero, but those were pretty easy shots. Those are shots that we normally see him make. So in terms of the creativity, like I get what Tatum's saying, but at the same time, if KP makes those four shots that were him against Tyler Hero, are we really saying we need to be more creative? At some point, it's like a make or miss thing. But one thing I did notice is that the Celtics were just expecting, to Tatum's point, expecting to just be able to enter the ball without any sort of resistance. Right. And that's the thing that the Heat do a really good job of, is they contest every single pass. They contest your first option and take your first option away. They contest your second option, try to take your second option away, and all of a sudden you're playing ISO, right? And that's what the Heat are so good at. And that's what playoff basketball is all about. And this is what we've been talking about all year. When it comes down to it, are the Celtics going to be able to play their free-flowing Missoula ball against a team that just makes life difficult and tries hard on every single pass? And that's the difference. And I think that's what, with KP, he had some open threes as well. They did a good job contesting him. To me, that was just like he missed a lot of shots he normally makes. But I hear Tatum's point. What were your thoughts?
I think the part that the point that you made about the Heat contesting every pass, I feel like we talk so much more about contesting every shot, but they contest every pass. So I like the way that you put that. And there's a lot of bad passes in this game from the Celtics, as far as just like you touched on it earlier. There was, you know, there's one I'm thinking of. It was Jaylen Brown trying to get the ball to KP in the lane, just a complete lob pass that's just picked off. I can't remember if it was Hakez or Jovic late in the game. There was Holiday and KP were doing their Flint Tropics impression, trying to go back and forth and get KP set up in the post. Caleb Martin picks off one of Holiday's entry passes, or maybe it hits Porzingis' hands and then he rips it from him. Just passes that were a little bit lazy. And if you're going to give Miami that opportunity, they're going to take it, right? They were, from Miami's perspective, they felt much more physically involved in this game, right, than they were in game one. And that's obviously strategic. And I think with Porzingis, Hero's the type of guy that I expect him to dominate, right? Like you said, he was 0-for-4 and he had some really makeable shots. That's one where I think he just has to, it's make or miss, but he's just got to be better. There's other times where he's getting matched up with guys like Hakez or Jovic who are a little bit bigger. And I think those are the guys where, I mean, think back to how we used to defend Porzingis, right? We'd have a guy like Marcus Smart, or we'd have a guy like Jaylen Brown. Not saying those guys are equivalent one-to-one, but you're going to have kind of a sturdy wing that can get up under Porzingis, right? That can maybe also get around Porzingis to get a steal, or can get up into his chest when he's trying to get that jump shot off. And so I think for those guys, those are matchups that Miami seemed very happy to live with, right? And even the Hero matchup, they were happy to live with. So I think that's going to be interesting to see how Mazzulla adjusts, especially knowing that Spo is going to be expecting the adjustment. And so Spo's going to have another trick or do something else. And so then you have to be ready to adjust to that. So I'm a little bit curious, Greg, to get your thoughts as we head to game three on Saturday from an offensive perspective. Is this a little bit of, you know, playing with a little bit more pace and movement? Or is there something specific that you think maybe Joe Mazzulla needs to insert in this offense to get more out of it than we certainly did last night?
To be honest, man, I haven't done enough film study to answer that. I would say the one thing, just thinking about Porzingis, just like a specific action, right? You throw the ball to Porzingis in the post. I'm thinking about that Jrue Holiday play that you were talking about, where they were kind of throwing the ball back and forth with Jrue was on the right wing, right? Entered the ball into the end of the block. And, you know, maybe a grenade action. So you throw the ball to KP in the post and he dribbles up towards Jrue for a dribble handoff going downhill. Something like that, I think, is just like puts a lot of pressure on a defense, and it's a little bit more than just trying to play advantage basketball out of the post, which I like. I like when the Celtics do that, but it does become predictable. And I think that's another thing with the clip that you showed earlier with Tatum standing at the top of the key against the set defense. I'm always about shifting the defense before attacking the defense, and anytime attacking a set defense, to me, that's just not smart basketball. So I would like to see the Celtics really try to get second side actions going. Even the empty side actions that I alluded to earlier, I think are a great place to go, but you don't have to just run that as the first action of the offense to create the advantage, right? You can still do that off of different actions to create the empty side that shifts the defense a little bit. So that's kind of my initial thoughts. And then with the Celtics, it's always make or miss, dude. It's always make or miss. When they make shots, it looks good. And when they miss shots, it looks bad. And we all overreact to it. Looking at the usage numbers, I think another thing I would probably go. So for the game, Jaylen was at 34.1. He had a hell of a game. Not going to knock Jaylen for having a high usage rate. Tatum, 30. Kristaps, 19.7. What do you think Derek White's usage rate was? Last game, it was a little over 20.
I mean, I would love to know what it was prior to the fourth quarter, because the fourth quarter, he probably bumped.
Fourth quarter is 22%.
Okay, gotcha. So for the game, I'm going to say, I don't know, maybe 15%, 14%.
11%.
11%, yeah, I mean.
Out of Derek White.
Yeah, it was without that fourth quarter bump. It felt very much like Derek White was not really involved in this game until the fourth quarter, when he started to get it.
Oh, double the usage rate in the fourth quarter, right?
Yeah.
So I think for me, although Jaylen and Jason had it going, and Derek White isn't like the greatest ISO player, so if the Heat are trying to make the Celtics go ISO, that doesn't lend itself to Derek White like balling out. But just because the team is guarding you and switching everything doesn't mean you have to fall into the trap that they want you to fall into and play ISO. There are other ways that you can still create advantages. Putting Derek White in, once again, empty corner pick and roll actions, Derek White creates advantages all the time. out of that. I think the ball needs to be in Derek White's hands more. He can't have 11% usage rate for a game.
Yeah, I feel like we've said this before. I feel like we've talked many times, like, just don't forget about Derek White. Like, I know we have other things that work, but it almost feels like, and this is what his teammates have said in various interviews throughout the year, is that they get so mad at Derek White when he makes the wrong decision, because he never does. So they're not expecting it, right? Yeah. And so it just feels like when Derek White has the ball or Derek White's involved, good things tend to happen. And even though good things can happen elsewhere, we need to not forget. Like, we can't have that 11% usage rate with a guy like Derek White. I think he's just too important in the way that he connects so many different things for this team. You just can't forget that. But let's transition here. Let's go over to the defensive side of things, because this was a big narrative that came out of the game last night. Was obviously the Heat shot historically, like, that just happens sometimes. Sometimes the math maths, and in this case, the Heat shot 23 of 43 from the 3-point line. 23 made threes. That's a playoff record for the Miami Heat. I'll try to find the stat here in a second. It was something that blew my mind last night, just about how historically hot the Heat have shot the ball, specifically against the Celtics. And so I'll find it here in just a second. But Greg, when you look at last night's defense, a lot has been made about open versus, you know, wide open threes, and the game plan is to kind of let the Heat shoot. What was your takeaways looking at the defense, and maybe what could have been done better?
Yeah, with the Mazzulla's comments on the amount of contested shots, I think he said most of them were marginally contested or contested well enough. I can't remember his exact verbiage there. Mm-hmm. But according to NBA.com tracking, only 19 of the 43 three-pointers were contested, right? So that means they had 23 uncontested, yeah, three-point shots. I don't know the percentages of those uncontested three-point shots, how many went in, but I do know that in order to shoot well, you need to have a rhythm. In order to have a rhythm, you need to have space, right? So the fact that they didn't even contest half the three-point shots, to me, tells me that the Celtics did not do a good job of making them feel uncomfortable. Think about, right, just like if you just juxtapose our defense with the Heat defense, like, them being up in our jerseys and contesting everything versus the way that we play defense, where we were kind of just like playing a mental game, daring them to shoot. To me, that just isn't a recipe.
Do you think we were like, hey, you know, that Draymond strategy didn't work versus us. What if we try it versus the Heat?
Right.
What if we just dare them
against,
to shoot?
Against all of these NBA players that do this for a fucking living. And they just have like a bunch of guys, man, that they when they get... You know, the Heat are similar to the Celtics in that they play best when they're front running. Caleb Martin is definitely a front runner. Tyler Hero is definitely a front runner. And this is what I said, dude, going into the fourth quarter of game one, I said, the one thing I don't want to see is that they develop a rhythm shooting from deep, right? And then Wright got super hot in the fourth quarter. Hero hit a couple threes. And that stuff does carry over from game to game. I think it was on the Mind the Game podcast where they were talking about, like, at the end of a playoff game, what do you need to pay attention to? And that was, so I've been trying to like lock into a little bit of like, mm-hmm, their perspective on it. And you know, you cannot let people get hot from distance, because that stuff does go from game, right, to game, and you start to feel confident
beyond the analytics.
Exactly. You start to feel confident, and it's just, that's just basketball, dude. The ball finds energy, and you know, when you're a confident shooter, the ball seems to go in.
Yeah, and our guy Winfred here hooked us up here. He's got the 15 of 23 from that wide open statistic that you mentioned earlier, 15 of 23. And then the other statistic that I was trying to find here while you were talking, this was yesterday. I found this was going around on Twitter. Miami now has 4 playoff games in the past 2 seasons, shooting 50% from 3 against Boston, just specifically against Boston. So that's 8 games, 50% from 3. No other team has more than 1 against anyone. So that's every other series that's taken place over, you know, the first 2-3 games of this postseason, all of last postseason. Miami has shot more than 50% 4 times in 8 games, or 9 games against Boston. Like, that's crazy, some voodoo, man. Shit, man. That's some voodoo shit. And that's why, for me, I think you nailed it, Greg. For me, when I was watching this game, you know, like I said, I was catching up on it yesterday, then I rewatched it today. And yeah, you need to close out, make them feel more uncomfortable. But where that starts for me is, what was one of the first things that we praised about the Celtics from game one? Is, man, how awesome was that when we started the game and Jaylen Brown and Drew Holiday were up in everybody's shirt from the moment, whether it was three-quarter court or right at half court? That intensity, that point of attack defense wasn't there last night. That was not the same. That was a remarkable difference of something that, you know, I thought was a game changer as far as, you know, to your point, you started the whole podcast off with, it's a different team, man. This isn't the same team. That felt different. Yesterday felt old, right? That felt like an older version of the Celtics. Game one with Jaylen Brown, who's been on a crusade to try and make his case for all NBA. That was the guy that we got leading that attack, that defensive attack in game one. Drew Holiday, the same thing. I can think of one possession where it felt like that, but then it wasn't consistent, you know, throughout the game last night. And so for me, that's really where it starts, because the game plan of making Miami into shooters, which, number one, they kind of have to be shooters. That's the other part of this equation, is when you look at the talent deficit, like, how else are you going to make it up? The math is only going to math if you take enough threes to sway it in your favor. And Miami's not really a three-point shooting team. They're kind of middle of the road when it comes to attempts, when it comes to percents. Like, for example, I looked this up. They have two guys on their team all season that made over 100 threes. Now, the Celtics shoot a lot more. The Celtics have eight guys that made over 100 threes. So this is not necessarily the way Miami plans to play, but this is what Spo does. Spo will create a game plan based on their needs. And yesterday, it dictated, and what it's going to dictate for the rest of the series, that they have to shoot threes and they have to try to out three the Celtics while making them take less threes, right? Yeah. That's kind of the game plan. And that's what they executed on yesterday. So there's a part of me that's, listen, they made 23 threes. I want to say they're not going to do it again, but we've seen it happen too many times in the last nine games that, at least if you're Joe Mazzulla in the staff, you can't be as relaxed about it as you were. You still want them to take threes. You gotta be locked in. That's fine. But you need to like, just too many times where the guys were looking at each other and just nobody closed out. Like, you can't have that. Just cannot. Absolutely.
Well, even, I mean, there was a lot of miscommunications too, which started in the fourth quarter, game one. There's one play in particular. I think it was Drew Holiday got blown by off of the left slot, I think by Hero. Jaylen was guarding Caleb Martin in the corner. So Jaylen saw Drew get beat. He slides over to stop the drive, right? You don't normally want to help off strong side corner, but when that happens, the Celtics all year have been peel switching out. So Drew would then, you know, angle out to the corner, and Drew just continued to follow Tyler Hero into the paint. So now we have Jaylen Brown, Drew Holiday, and Kristaps had slid over as well. Three guys guarding Tyler Hero, wide open pass out to Caleb Martin. Yep. They're not locked in on those switches, because that should be Drew Holiday peel switching out to the corner. The moment he gets beat, he understands Jaylen Brown just slid over, because that's kind of been what they've been doing all year. And Drew's such a smart defender, he should have went out to the corner. So there are a lot of instances like that where the Celtics just haven't been locked in on the switches. And it started in the fourth quarter of game one, where all of a sudden they're just miscommunicating everywhere. So hopefully they can go into the film session, really lock in, focus, and take care of business. Because I know our next topic here, playoff future, and that's something I'm really thinking about right now, Will.
Yeah, we'll get to that here in just a second. I want to get to this question we have in the chat.
Can I ask Fred? Yeah. Let me know. Have you made adjustments in your life to be able to fit all the things that you want to do in your day? You asked me that in the Discord. I gave you kind of my advice on how I'm doing it. So as we're talking here, I want you to let me know in the chat if you've made any adjustments and how it's going so far.
Personal life advice in the Discord. If you guys want to get in there, the inbox is open. Join us with the link below. The question we got: did Pritchard look small for the first time in a while last night? And I feel like this is something we actually touched on a little bit last episode, saying that this would be a series that we feel like Pritchard could play in, and that, you know, really when we think of him being small, there's at least one, maybe two teams out west that we really think of. But last night, weird night for Peyton Pritchard, especially after how well he played down the stretch of the regular season and into game one. Last night for Peyton Pritchard, 20 minutes, zero field goal attempts. A very odd stat line for him. Did have three assists and a rebound, but Yeah, just kind of a weird night. What were your thoughts on what you saw or what you didn't see from Peyton Pritchard last night, Greg?
Don't really have many thoughts, man, on it, to be honest. I haven't locked into the Pritchard part of it yet. I was focusing more on the starting five and like bigger adjustments. So I'll have to watch some more tape on Pritchard. I think just like from what I saw, this is the issue with having a 6 foot point guard coming off the bench. You know, this is why I was clamoring for the Celtics to make a move for Caruso. Just because I thought there were going to be moments in a 7-game series where Pritchard wasn't going to have the same impact that he can have in a game. And I love Peyton Pritchard, but mm-hmm. at some point 6 feet is 6 feet and you can't teach height.
Yeah. I mean, I think a little bit of this too was, you know, we talked about last night, the Heat kind of suckering the Celtics into playing more ISO ball and kind of going for the mismatch. What's the mismatch for Pritchard, right? There's not really going to be. And because they were okay with living with a lot of their, you know, one-on-one matchups and using, you know, stunts and pinches as opposed to true doubles, there really wasn't much opportunity for Peyton Pritchard to then use his spacing to that advantage, right? And there wasn't quite as much probably, you know, dribble kick opportunities as the Celtics would have liked to have seen. So it just kind of limited. So I think it was just a weird game. I'm not ready to read into it fully for this series for Peyton Pritchard yet. It did cross my mind though, so I won't lie to you there. But yeah, I think, you know, because like you, Greg, you said, they didn't play enough pace, right? There's not enough pace. They weren't playing with enough emphasis. That's kind of where Peyton Pritchard, where to JJ Redick's point, like can come in and be a game changer. Wasn't that last night. There wasn't that imprint on the game. Yeah, exactly. If only they played faster, it would be no problem for PP. So I do think that is something that could change in game three, is that if Pritchard's in there, like, let's go. Like he needs to be the pesk that we know that he can be, right? So I think that's something to look forward with Peyton Pritchard. One last thing here on the Celtics defense before we start talking about the future and you know, just how this game maybe has changed or maybe has not changed our opinion on the future here. You mentioned this earlier, Bam Adebayo, Greg. I gotta tip my cap. We've seen this from Bam Adebayo usually 2-3 times a series. It's really hard for him to be consistently the guy that he was last night, but I rewatched all of his shots, pretty well contested. Like, but if he's going to make those shots in the paint, it's going to affect your defense from the attention it gets and what it allows the rest of the Miami Heat offense to do. But I wouldn't make any dramatic changes to how they defended Bam. I thought Bam just made some really, really difficult shots.
What's up, Celtics fans? You know, the other day I was talking to two girls. Yeah, that's right, two. Who were telling me how into foreplay they are and how they wished they had more single guys to do it with. No. Not that foreplay. We're not looking to get you teed up on the pod. I'm talking F-O-U-R-P-L-A-Y foreplay. It's an app where single friends team up and double date other single friends. It's a more fun, lower pressure, and safer way to meet new people, which is exactly why those single girls love it. In fact, they love it so much that they make up the majority of the teams on the app, as in a 3-to-1 ratio in your favor, gentlemen. Look, we all know everything is better with the wingman. Just ask Jason and Jalen. And with foreplay, you don't have to sacrifice bromance for romance, because it's a chance to enjoy a night out with a buddy while meeting two new people in a more social environment without the expectations. And the icing on the cake? It's totally free. All right, it's game time. So head over to the App Store now and download foreplay, F-O-U-R-P-L-A-Y, and get ready for a little two-on-two.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts. Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Bam's good, man. I think this is what drives Heat fans crazy about him, is that he shows these flashes of being elite offensive talent, and he, like, to be honest, can be a hub of an offense. And there are some games where, whatever reason, and Jimmy kind of has this about him as well, where they just kind of float throughout a game on the offensive side of things. And maybe it's an energy thing. You know, he's a human being and he expends so much goddamn energy on the defensive side of things that maybe
the reverse Trae Young.
Yeah. Maybe there are some games where he's just like, man, I only can do one side of the ball tonight. Right. It might be something like that. Cause when you see him this efficient in the post, and you saw it, I mean, he always kills the Celtics in certain games. He was like, why can't you do this every game?
Right.
You know, which is what would drive me absolutely insane if he was on my team. Cause you see it and you're like, your shot is money from the mid range. You have great shake in the post. He absolutely left Jaylen Brown in the dust on that turnover, his right shoulder fadeaway going to the middle. He has all the moves in the book. And there are just some games where it seems like he's in his own head about his shot. And that's the only thing I can think of, is that he's a human being and he's like in his own head. Like, that's it.
Hey, why do you only average 19 instead of 25? I'm a human being, man. I'm just a human being out here.
Just a human being. Like, I wish I had better analysis than that, but like that's really what I see.
Even just because we've played the Heat so many times, like, I get why Heat fans are frustrated, because there's 2 to 3 games a series that Bam just has these moments where you're like, damn, Bam is like, how does Bam not average 25 points a game? Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, he's got the moves, he's got the ability, but most nights I feel like you end up with his stat line. He's going to give you amazing defense every single night, which is fantastic, but you end up with a lot of nights where he ends up, you know, 13 points on 4 of 11 shooting, something to that effect. You know what I mean? And it's really confusing, because a night like last night, he was 9 of 13. He's incredibly efficient. They probably could have even gone to him more, but obviously they were shooting the ball so well that they were kind of riding that. But we've seen it before in different games in these last couple of seasons. So the Bam Adebayo piece of this, I think the Celtics defended it pretty well for the most part. And so I would continue to say, hey, Bam, you've never been able to back up this 25 or 30 point game you have to do it again. So keep trying to do that. And then also, you know, are they going to make 23 threes? I wouldn't expect it, but like we said, you got to have, you got to make them more uncomfortable. You can't let them get comfortable so that they can get into that zone. So with that, Greg, let's go to our last topic here, and let's talk about the playoff future. I'll be honest, I kind of thought there'd be some more, even more spicy takes going around. A lot of just frustration, I think, is mostly what ended up happening. I know probably from a, you know, major media consumption, the spiciest tweet that I saw was probably Kevin O'Connor, former Celtics blog employee. But Kevin O'Connor basically saying that, you know, with this, the Nuggets are going to sweep the Celtics. Like, this Celtics team is essentially, without him saying it directly, so here it is: the Celtics would get swept by Denver, maybe take one game due to a hot shooting night, but they have no chance if it's the Nuggets in the NBA Finals. Zero. I'm not there yet. We've always said the Nuggets would be a struggle, but to me right now, it's just one game. Like, it's a frustrating game. But to me, it's just one game. I haven't really changed my outlook on this team. I still think this team will be in the NBA Finals. And I think if they do face the Denver Nuggets, I am still at a point where I can't say I expect them to win, but I think they absolutely are going to have a very realistic chance to do so. Where are you at right now, Greg?
I'd say somewhere in between. Dude, when you watch the Nuggets, there's just a level that they play at that I don't see the Celtics getting to as consistently as they get in big moments. And maybe it's because the Celtics have just fucking blown everybody out and they haven't had the opportunity to do it in big moments quite as much as the Nuggets, who play closer games than the Celtics. But Jokic is just inevitable at this point, man. Yeah, like,
he really
watching those games against the Lakers are fucking good, dude. The Lakers are a good basketball team, and Anthony Davis is playing at an unbelievable level. LeBron James looks like he's fucking 32 again, and it doesn't matter because Jokic is that good. And I think at the end of the day, if the Celtics lose to the Nuggets in the finals, to me, it's not going to be on the Celtics, and it's not gonna, like, to me, that's just like how good Jokic is, and it's gonna continue to stack on his resume, where, you know, when it's all said and done with Jokic, we might be talking about him as a top five player of all time, and he needs to continue to stack up all the stuff on his resume in order to do that. Right. One huge tip in your cap, you know, feather in your cap, would be beating the Boston Celtics and beating them handily in the finals with the super team that the Celtics have put together. So I don't necessarily think they would get swept, but I do know that I thought the Lakers were going to get one of those first two games, and it didn't happen. And the Lakers were pretty good.
That game two for the Lakers not to get was really, really tough. And to your point, like, I don't think the Lakers played that bad. I mean, you can't blow a 20-point lead. You can't even blow a 20-point lead. Like, it wasn't like the Lakers
they did a bunch of shit, but that I feel like I would be like, oh, I could see the Celtics doing that. You know what I mean? Like, in the third quarter when they're up 20 and they just forget they can throw the ball to Anthony Davis on the block. Like, Anthony Davis.
Yeah, touch the ball much in the second half. Yeah.
Yeah, and they put Gordon on him, which was a big adjustment, and Gordon was getting in his jersey, making it difficult for him. But they were just like, oh, no, we'd rather run some the dribble handoffs on the perimeter with fucking D'Lo and Torian Prince. Like, that's not going to work. Like, you got to utilize your best players. And I don't think they utilized AD in the second half, but that's one of those things where in the moment, maybe it's a coaching thing, maybe it's the players to recognize it in the moment, but there were moments in the game with the Nuggets. It was like, they know exactly what they're trying to do. You used the word intention earlier in the podcast, Will. And that's what I see when I see the Nuggets play. They play with intention. That's what I see when I see the New York Knicks play. They play with intention, and they have an identity, and they always are going to grind you to a freaking pulp. And that's what the Knicks do. They always do that. The Celtics don't always do anything super consistently. we see a lot of great moments from the Celtics, but there's never that, like, even when they're like on their super hot streaks, it's kind of like, oh, they're just really hot from three and they're all amazing basketball players. You know what I mean? It's not like there's never one recipe that really gets it done. The thing that I would like them to do is to be that team that's always driving and kicking, moving the ball, and making themselves be really difficult to guard. And to your point earlier, there are times where they just don't do that, man. They stand around and just watch Tatum do what he does, or watch Jalen do what he does.
So I started thinking of this last night, and I don't know that I necessarily have the best way to put it. So I'm going to try and speak through it here and see if you can interpret what I'm saying.
Okay.
So I think there's this balance of versatility versus identity, right? And so I think we've talked a lot about
versatility versus identity.
Yeah.
Okay.
And there's like this balance of it, right? And so I think we've talked a lot all season about the Celtics being able to beat you when they're hot from three, when they're not hot from three, when they're working out of the post, when they're, you know, Derek White has the ball and, you know, and is running the show, or if Jason Tatum has the ball and is kind of running the show. We've talked a lot about that, but I think the one thing that a team specifically like the Nuggets, and even to certain degrees teams like the Knicks and a few other teams, like, they have a better balance of like, listen, we need to be versatile so that we can match up with different schemes. But at the end of the day, this is the team we are. This is what we're going to when we need something. And what, like, to your point, I don't really know what the answer I would say for the Celtics is in that regard. Like, the Nuggets, I know for them, it's you can't beat our Jokic and Murray two-man game. Like the Knicks, we're just going to outwork you. That's what we're going to do when we're not sure what else works. Is Josh Hart is going to get every Josh Hart and Isaiah Hartenstein are going to get every offensive rebound that they possibly can, and we're just going to outwork you. You know, a team like the Thunder, they're just going to be young and athletic. Like that's going to be kind of what they fall back on. For the Celtics, I feel like versatility is our biggest strength, but also it can't really also be your identity because then you don't have an identity. So I don't know. I was trying to work that out in my head to figure out like what the best way to talk about it is. But what do you think about that?
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, man. Because like versatility is dependent on an environment, right? Where like you don't always need to be versatile. Your environment is going to tell you when you need to be versatile, right? Where that versatility can show. So like they're adaptable to a lot of situations, but because of that, I'm also thinking through of it now, thinking through with you now, but because of that, they haven't coalesced into one specific thing, right? Mm-hmm. And to me, whenever I think about this team, I'm just like, we talked about earlier, and I don't want to be the Derek White guy, but like, I feel like Derek White needs to be a little bit more part of that identity. And I think the defensive identity can be there where they're super locked in. They can switch everything.
That's fair.
And I think that's where the versatility comes into play. But like offensively, man, all I see when I see the Celtics in a big moment, I see an empty side action with Derek White and Jason Tatum, with Derek White's a ball handler and Jason Tatum's a screener. Like that's what I see. That's what I want to see.
I mean, and I don't see enough. Weirdly enough, if you had to close your eyes right now and picture a Celtic hitting a big shot, who is it?
It's Derek White.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So, so like to me, dude, like, okay, so say there's, I don't know, let's call it 45 seconds left in a game. Celtics need a bucket. You bring the ball up the court on the left side of the court. Derek White has the ball. Okay. Jason Tatum starts at the nail. Let's just say that. And he comes over to set that screen. On the other side, you have Jaylen Brown in the corner with Porzingis and Jrue Holiday running a double stagger to occupy the defense on the backside, right? With maybe Porzingis sets the first screen and then rolls hard to the basket off of that as the Derek White, Jason Tatum two-man game is happening on the other side. Like to me, there's no reason why that can't be a staple of that offense, you know, where when we need a bucket, it's almost unguardable. You have the ball in your best decision maker's hand. You have your best player setting a screen where that's going to freak the defense out. And then you also have Jaylen Brown coming off of a double pin down on the other side if they take that away. You know,
and so potentially Jrue Holiday fade into the corner where he hits, oh, I don't know, 60% of his fucking threes.
Right. And like, I don't know, maybe somebody who knows more about basketball than I do can tell me why that's not going to work in a clutch situation.
Like
maybe we can have someone come talk about that. But to me, I feel like I know a lot about basketball. I watch a lot of basketball. I play a lot of basketball. I coach a lot of basketball. To me, that's an action that should work and at least is a good starting point for success in crunch time. And I don't see the Celtics go to that enough.
And to another point that you've hammered home multiple times this season, you don't just have a set defense looking at you with five eyes. Like they have to respect all of the other movements that are happening. So I'm with you. To kind of wrap this up, let's take it back from the, you know, all the way to the lens all the way out to the finals. In the East now, it's 1-1. We're heading to Miami for game 3. Number one, are you at all worried that the Celtics could somehow lose the series?
Yeah.
You are, oh my god.
I know that probably makes me crazy, but like I have this pit in my stomach, dude, that until the Celtics get rid of this fucking team, I'm going to feel that in my stomach. I just really think
so free in all of our heads.
It's sad. It really is sad, I'm just being honest, you know. I'm just being honest.
No, I want you to be honest. I get
that's
it.
How I feel. Like I have a sense of dread. There's a part of me that's just wondering, because the Heat have never really been without Jimmy with Hero healthy to this degree. There's a part of me that's just wondering, can the Heat catch lightning in a bottle and like figure out this new identity where they just shoot a shit ton of threes, because they're a great defensive team. They're top 10 defensive team.
They are still a good defensive team. That's one thing that will still hold up. For me, I still can't see this going beyond. I can see it now. Offense,
though, man. They haven't scored the ball this year. And like, maybe Spoelstra's like, we need to win the fucking math game. Let's just shoot a ton of threes. We know our defense is going to hold them under 110 points every game, because that's what the Heat do. So maybe they can just shoot more threes.
I mean, we only scored 114 in the game one victory, even though we won by 20. It was 114. So I see your point. I'm not there yet. And, you know, one thing that, whether or not this makes sense, there's one thing that kind of keeps me at peace for right now. Check back Saturday night. We'll see if I'm still at peace. But you think back to the last Celtic team that had this level of expectations and this level of success in the regular season. I'm talking about the 07-08 Celtics. We all remember the first series against the Atlanta Hawks, one seed versus an eight seed. Atlanta Hawks were 37-45. That 37-45 team took a 66 wins. We want to talk about a difference between a first round opponent and, you know, the one seed and the eight seed, and the difference in games. Like, this Miami Heat team still won, I think, 46 games, right? Like, they still were pretty easily over 500. You know, in that season, the Celtics had to go seven games against those Hawks. And, you know, each series is going to live on its own. It's going to be its own, you know, its own battle. So for me, I'm still leaning on that little piece of history that I'm not ready to panic quite yet. I still think most things that I thought about the Celtics, you know, 4 days ago before they played game one, I still feel pretty confident in that. But once again, this is the playoffs. It changes really quickly. So check back in Sunday when we record, and who knows, maybe I'll have an entirely different, completely panicked outlook on this entire series. But any final thoughts here, Greg, before we log this off?
I know I've told you, you know, privately, but I think your interview with Drew Carter was amazing. If you're listening and you haven't listened to that interview that Will did, that's on the podcast feed and on it's on the YouTube feed.
Yeah, it's on the YouTube feed as well. Yep.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, you did an unbelievable job. I know Adam and I both couldn't do it because of prior commitments, but it was really, really funny to hear Drew talking about blacking out and punching a manager back when he was 21 years old. I love how Drew's just like, fuck it, I'm just going to be real and tell you how my life is. You know, he's like, he's not at all.
I mean, it's worked for him so far. He's 26, 27 years old, voice of the Celtics. Like, it's working out pretty good so far living that way.
No, he's such a cool dude. And like, getting to meet him in San Antonio was great, because like, you know, we met him on the pod, but it's different meeting somebody in person. So I thought you did a really good job that interview, dude. It was really well done. And I say this, I tweet it all the time, but I truly think you're the best host in all of the podcasts, Celtics podcast universe. I don't think there's anybody better. I think there are people that are good and good at what they do, but we have the best and we're lucky to have you.
Hey, I appreciate that, man. With Drew, you know, he mentioned sometimes with Joe Mazzulla, he gets a little frustrated because it takes two to tango. It's pretty easy to tango with Drew.
I was thinking when he was talking about the Al, what there's like some question that he thought was a good question. What do you remember? What question he brought up?
It was something he tried to. Oh, the Jokic matchup. It's about matchups.
Jokic matchup. So he said like, oh, he kind of asked Joe a question that was a yes or no question. So my advice, Drew, if you're listening, my advice is to ask that open ended question. So rather than like, are you going to stick with Horford on Jokic, which is a yes to no question, tell me what you liked about Horford on Jokic.
All right, Drew. There you go. Man couldn't make the interview, but he's got advice for you. So make sure that you're tuned in. I know Drew was upset that he didn't get a chance to have you and Adam. So we'll make that happen again. That will be down the line. We'll make sure we have Drew back here. Shout out to Drew Carter, the future voice of the Boston Celtics. For this show, we're going to wrap it up here, guys. Appreciate you all joining us, those who joined us live. If you did not, don't worry. We'll be back next Thursday. You'll have another opportunity to do so. In the meantime, like Greg said, make sure you check out the interview with Drew Carter. Make sure you're subscribing to the Celtic Chronicle if you want to get Adam's thoughts on everything happening in the playoffs. And then likely the three men, we will be reunited for a Sunday podcast. So no post-game pod on Saturday, the way this has lined up so far, just kind of lining up with our our regular podcast schedule. So we will have game three reaction for you Sunday on YouTube and on the audio feed. So be on the lookout for that. That's going to do it for this episode of Green with Envy. As we always do, here's some Black Sheep Optimus for you on the way out. Celtics in Miami, game three, Saturday. Time to bounce back. Peace, y'all.
Yo, I flipped it like Simone Biles.
Miles from a throne, see me smile cause I found peace.
While I'm at home,
I rhyme a little bit different, got that sound of my own.
And with the time limit, I'm shifting, man, I'm proud that I've grown. It's that right time
to rise to the occasion, put the pen up on the paper
and flip the occupation. I'm getting motivated,
it's goals to be created.
I'm making this a moment, there's no time for waiting. See the city from a bird's third eye word.
I learn to observe what the many won't find. Don't mind me,
flying to the moon, doing fine. See, sliding on the ground, I'll take another cup of rhymes, please God. I lost a dollar and a dime piece. They found me on the floor while I was trying to find me.